Welcome to WMNF 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. You're listening to the Tuesday Cafe with Sean Canaan. Happy holidays. Well, I was hoping to bring in a doctor today to answer your questions about the ongoing spike in COVID-19 cases in Florida. Just a few weeks ago, the rate of positive coronavirus tests was below 5% in all Tampa Bay area counties. But now the positivity rate in Pinellas was 7.2% during the week that ended December 17th. I didn't have any luck lining up a busy doctor this week. I will try again for next week's Tuesday Cafe. Later in the show, we'll talk more about COVID-19 numbers and what you can do to protect yourself. But during the first half of the show, I'm going to share the words of inspiration from and about some grassroots activists who passed away in 2021. We're going to listen to a program called Making Contact. This episode is hosted by a familiar voice to longtime WMNF listeners. It's former WMNF reporter Andrew Stelzer. And then after Making Contact, we're going to hear the voice of a notable 2021 passing who died after that program was produced. Just a few minutes ago on Democracy Now, we heard Mumia Abu-Jamal talking about the passing of Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Well, he died Sunday at the age of 90, and I'm going to play a 5-minute audio story that I produced for WMNF in January of 2006, that is, when Tutu spoke at the University of South Florida in Tampa. So I hope you stay tuned for that, to hear that. You'll hear some of what Tutu said during that 2006 speech in Tampa, and you'll hear his infectious laughter. But first up, I'm going to play the Making Contact Fallen Heroes 2021 episode.
Making contact.
Making contact.
We are living in one world dominated by the same system, the capitalist patriarchal military racist system against women and against the poor. And we are living in this world, so we have to revolt together and change the system together. And without working together, we will never succeed.
That's author and activist Nawa al-Sadawi, considered by many to be the godmother of feminism in Egypt. She's one of thousands of social justice leaders in communities all over the world who passed away this year. I'm Andrew Stelzer, and this is Making Contact. As we mourn the recent loss of Bell Hooks, Greg Tate, and so many others, we wanted to share words of inspiration from and about some grassroots activists that may not have been very well known outside their particular communities. So we're closing out the year, as we usually do, with the fallen heroes of 2021. We begin with Western Shoshone rancher Carrie Dan.
This earth is our mother, it's not for sale, and it can't be taken by any country. The right was given to us by the Creator, and we're not going to give it to anybody else. We let people, other people other than ourselves, use that land.
My name is Mary Gibson. I'm Western Shoshone, and I am also the niece of Carrie Dan. She was a ranching woman. She and her sister Mary were ranching in Central Nevada for over 50 years. They took over the ranching business from their father. The land that Nevada now claims, or the United States now claims, as public land, Carrie has believed it is Western Shoshone land. This peace and friendship treaty made with the United States never ceded any land in any way. So it has been a fight for Carrie since a young age.
I find it quite appalling that a country like the United States is legitimizing the theft of the Western Shoshone land. I look at that as spiritual genocide against the Western Shoshone people.
In the early 70s, the Dan sisters decided that they were not going to be paying the Bureau of Land Management's required grazing fees because they didn't feel like it was their responsibility. They were ranching, they were grazing their cattle on their own land, and the BLM rounded up their cattle, their livestock, and horses as punishment. Their fines accrued up to millions.
I saw the military force of the United States in September when they came out to gather our cattle. Too bad not all you people could see what happened to us out there. But they did take away our livelihood. And it was sad. It still is sad. We have surveillance on us every day by the Bureau of Land Management. Surveillance this very day. Probably they're out there now or was out there this morning. There's threats of all kinds against us. But I'll tell you one thing. I'm not paying United States grazing fees because this is still Western Shoshone land.
Carrie happened to live right in the valley where environmental degradation is happening on a very high scale level with gold mining. And Carrie and her sister Mary were heavily involved in the environmental aspects of our territory. Carrie was also involved with some of the protests at the Nevada test site, which happens to be on Western Shoshone ancestral lands as well.
They're pumping this virgin water out so that we as human beings can enjoy wearing gold. Ladies and gentlemen, you are killing the earth. The earth is dying because of the way people act. You as consumers, they as producers of gold. And we as indigenous people, we're yelling, stop that, you're killing our mother. Who's gonna hear us? Stop that, you're killing the earth. You're killing mother of all life, for God's sakes. Can't you wake up and listen to what we're saying to you?
Sex workers' rights activist, Margot St. James.
Men have not had to address the issue of prostitution because women haven't been together enough to stand up and make that demand. But I think that we're doing it today.
My name is Johanna Breyer, and I'm the founding executive director of St. James Infirmary, which was also started by Margot St. James. It's the first occupational health and safety clinic in the United States for sex workers. It's all peer-based. It's run for and by sex workers, and Margot was our director emeritus and helped to get this clinic started back in 1999. She was one of my mentors in terms of doing the sex worker organizing efforts in the San Francisco Bay Area.
The word whore is still used to keep other women in line, all women. But the punishment of the prostitute is the example set by the system that if you don't, you know, act right, bow down to men, I suppose, you'll get what's coming to you. And a lot of hookers are murdered in this country. I think it's because it's a criminalized system here where the victimization is institutionalized and the prostitute becomes a legitimate victim for rape, murder, robbery, any kind of abuse, verbal abuse, and physical abuse.
She was very clever in terms of making money and did not start out as a sex worker, but because she was arrested under the assumption of sex work, she kind of took that and ran with it. And that led to the formation of Coyote. Coyote stands for Call Off Your Old Tired Ethics. This was really around breaking down those barriers, breaking down those stigmas, classifying sex work as work rather than coming from the realm of prostitution and it being something that was stigmatizing.
I quit hooking in my late 20s when I realized that the men who I was accommodating and called my friends, my clients, were, when they stepped outside my door, by their silence, my enemies. And I decided I could no longer accommodate the hypocrites.
In the early days of Coyote, Margot threw the hookers' balls. And those were in San Francisco, and these were huge galas. And local politicians would come. She had started the U.S. Whores Conference. She was sitting down in meetings with Gloria Steinem and Jane Fonda. So, you know, this was the time where a lot of the feminist ideologies were coming out, and Margot felt like sex workers should be included in that dialogue.
Well, of course, the basic lines of feminism is control of your own body and the ability to set your terms and control your destiny. And I think those three rights are lesbian rights, the right to have no men, abortion rights, the right to have no children or a limited number of children, and prostitutes' rights, which the right to do neither of the four above mentioned, but charge for the activity and profit from it.
Margot was able to sit down with legislators, with working class people, sit down with researchers, with academia, and, you know, she didn't make this very complicated. It was all about the rights of sex workers. She wanted civil rights. She wanted pay equity. She didn't want people being arrested. She wanted public health services. All of this was a continual message throughout her life in everything that she did.
Rohingya civilian leader Mohib Ullah.
Our top focus at this hour, top Rohingya community leader Mohib Ullah, belonging to a refugee camp in Bangladesh's Cox's Bazar, has been shot dead. Mohib Ullah was 48. He emerged as the main civilian leader of the persecuted Muslim minority community. Nearly 750,000 Rohingyas took refuge in camps in Bangladesh after a military crackdown by the Myanmar army on their villages in Rakhine province in August 2017.
My name is Mohammad Nokim. I am living in Cox's Bazar Rohingya refugee camp, Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh. Mohib Ullah was one of the leaders of our community of 1.1 million Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh and also the remaining Rohingya in Myanmar also.
Imagine you have no identity, no ethnicity, no country, nobody wants you. How would you feel? This is how we feel today as Rohingya.
He started to collect the documents of the atrocity against the Myanmar, which he did. How many people were killed by Myanmar government? How many women were raped? How many hostels were abandoned? First, he collected this, and then he used his voice to the international community, whoever visiting the camp. His life was threatened many times, and he lived in fear that he would be killed.
Over 120,000 Rohingya still live in concentration camp in Myanmar. Others outside live in fear of violence. In 2017, the Myanmar government dropped out 800,000 Rohingya to Bangladesh. They burned our houses, took our land, they gang raped women and girls, and they killed thousands of us.
In 2018, he organized a campaign. And then on 2019, he also make a big demonstration. It was like 1.1 million in one place. He called the media and he used their speech, just 3 points. He want to go home to Myanmar with equal rights. And he want justice.
For decades, we face systematic genocide in Myanmar. They took our citizenship, our land, they destroyed our mosques, shops. No travel, no high education, no health care, no jobs. They call us illegal immigrant, Bengali, Muslim terrorists. We are not any of this. We are citizens of Myanmar. We are Rohingya. We are not stateless. Stop calling us that. We have a state, it is Myanmar. So we want to go home to Myanmar. We our right, our citizenship and international security on the ground.
Listening to Making Contact. To stay up to date with our shows and get more information about the people profiled in this episode, visit us at radioproject.org. Now, back to more of the fallen heroes of 2021, beginning with the leader of the Hawaiian sovereignty movement, Dr. Haunani K. Trask.
This is WMNF Tampa.
We have another call waiting. Go ahead. What's your question, please?
My question concerns, you know, you blame it on the white man about on how we came over and take your land. I don't understand when the Japanese are coming over and they're buying it, and that's okay. I don't see what this is about the Howleys coming over. You come over to our country and buy up all land too. You know, it works both ways. I don't see how you can have this rallies and everything against the white man. This is America, you know.
Let me just say something to this call. This is not America. This is Polynesia. Our country was stolen. That's one of your problems. You're ignorant, woefully ignorant. I am very active against Japanese ownership of our land. I have testified repeatedly at various commissions and at the legislature in opposition to any foreigner owning Hawaiian land. But you, caller, need to learn about Hawaiian history and about where you are. You think you are in America. You are not in America. You are in a colony that is in Polynesia that was forcibly taken. The bad, bad United States of America took Puerto Rico, it took Alaska, it stole Indian land, it took Hawaii, it took Guam, it took Micronesia, Palau, and you had better learn that history because you are the recipient of an imperialist tradition.
My name is Hilary Sonora Pale, and I am with Kalahui Hawaii, a Native initiative for self-determination. Dr. Haunani K. Trask was a Kanaka Maoli, aka Native Hawaiian professor, whose writings and speeches helped to raise the consciousness of her people.
How do we lift the veil from the eyes of our people and show them that they will always, always fill up the prisons and the unemployment lines, always occupy the lowest educational and economic levels, always get squeezed out of their lands and put into rat-trap apartments, unless they resist, unless they fight back, unless they organize. In other words, unless they become political.
In the early 80s, the University of Hawaii was a very white place. They weren't used to Hawaiians speaking up and writing our own history and doing our own research. So then she moved over to the Hawaiian Studies Department. When she took over that department, there was maybe 20 students or majors. By the time she left, she had built a building for Hawaiian Studies. We had our own building. And because of her, we were able to reclaim Hawaiian knowledge and write our own histories and tell our own stories and actually challenge all the lies that have been told for decades about our people.
I am telling you what white racism is like on that campus. Right. There are 13 tenured Hawaiians on that campus. They are trying to remove one of the only tenured Hawaiians on that campus. There are 660 tenured white people.
In this age of social media, she's become relevant again, even more so. I mean, everybody knows who she is. And it's like that speech, 1993, January 17th, on the palace grounds, "I am not American."
We are not American! We are not American! We are not American! We are not American! Say it in your heart! Say it when you sleep! We are not American. We will die as Hawaiians. We will never be Americans.
Now that was a shocker. Some Hawaiians were very angry. And it took this long for Hawaiians to go, yeah, we are not American. She said things that needed to be said.
The Americans, my people, are our enemies. And you must understand that. They are our enemies. They took our land. They imprisoned our queen. They banned our language. They forcibly made us a colony of the United States. America always says they are democratic. Lies! That is a lie! They have never been democratic with Native people. They have never been democratic with Indians. They have never been democratic with Hawaiians.
Woo! because of her, we have so many Kanaka Maoli Native Hawaiian PhDs. Her students have actually started schools. Not just one, but a whole slew of them. They've created programs. And it's all the analysis and the way she taught her students, we've kind of soaked that in and carried it on.
Chicana feminist and organizer, Betita Martinez.
There's a whole long history of the resistance of Mexicanas, women, and Chicanas against wars, against injustice, going back to Christopher Columbus and going back to Cortez. There have been Native women fighting there in the 1500s, and we have a tradition people don't even know about.
My name is Clarissa Rojas. I am a Chicana professor at UC Davis, the University of California, Davis. Betita Martinez was a committed activist, a writer, and was foundational to Chicano journalism. She edited and wrote for the leading movement newspaper, El Grito del Norte. She was foundational to the civil rights movement, where she also worked with the Student Nonviolent Committee, SNCC, and to the Chicano movement, Chicana feminisms, and women of color and third world feminisms, where she began challenging patriarchal dominance in culture, politics, and history very early on.
There's two SNCC people from my background and the organization. We were the only two. Chicanas was the name we called ourselves. It began to be a movement even. Well, we tried to go about explaining Chicanas to all the people who knew only black and white.
Betita actually ended up, during her time in the Chicano movement, learning that she needed to contest the very political leadership styles that had developed. The way of doing movement work in the Chicano movement were what she called chingon politics, as she wrote about. Tough guy politics, in other words, an affliction, she said, that hardly was limited to la raza, but kind of defined the concepts and the styles of leadership through patriarchy, through a culture and politics of domination, which she wanted to move away from. So she challenged sexism in the Chicano movement.
I remember in the 60s in the Movimiento, when I was in Nuevo Mexico, and it was a struggle then, you know, at that time, okay, the Chicanas, they could make the coffee, but then they could type the minutes from the meetings with that. They could type the guy's speeches. Oh, not the speeches. They could sleep with the guy's one. They better. But anyway, but you know, I mean, doing security, oh God. Planning the strategy of a protest, being the main speakers at a protest, no, this was not allowed. It didn't happen. Nor did it happen for gay and lesbian people either.
Betita's legacy shaped our present reality at the nexus of race, class, and gender. She was really focused on alliance building and on getting us to work together. I actually had the wonderful opportunity of working with her in a book I co-edited, The Color of Violence, the Insight Anthology, where she wrote a chapter that focused on building solidarities among women of color. And she said, let us create a stubborn, imaginative, quote, honest, powerful insurgency. Let us counter the many forces that divide and conquer with instead a strategy of uniting and rebelling.
The enemy, it isn't white people. It isn't even just men. It's a whole system which exploits people. And it's a system that is the capitalist system, which is supposed to be triumphant for that, and globalizing for that. But what I think it really is a system that very much exploits people like everyone in this room.
She helped raise up generations of youngsters fumbling in our freshly laid organizing tracks. I raise up un brindis para una vida bien vivida, una lucha bien luchada, y muchos jóvenes bien guiados. You were and will always be a fountain of inspiration, and I hope to do justice by your legacy y seguir con el trabajo de cumplir con una vida justa para todos. Que viva Betita. Abajo con la guerra, arriba con la paz y justicia. Que viva Betita, que viva Betita, que viva.
Pan Pan-African scholar and historian Renoko Rashidi.
We have to, no matter how long it takes, give our people a sense of pride in African heritage. Nowadays, I have no shame associated with Africa at all. But when I was a youngster, 14, 15 years old, before I knew better, if you called me an African, those were fighting terms. Now, as I said earlier, if you say I'm not an African, we got to fight on our hands because I've come full circle.
My name is Anthony Browder. I am the director of the IKG Cultural Resource Center. Renoko Rashidi is important because he did a level of research that very few people in the world have ever done. Renoko traveled to over 134 countries and with his trusty camera was able to document paintings, sculptures, and other references that detailed the presence of African people as scholars, as leaders, as people of note in some of the most obscure places in Europe, Asia, the South Pacific, and throughout the Americas. Because of the work of Renoko Rashidi, the world has to acknowledge the role that African people have played in help shaping the world as it exists today.
These hands are important because the Olmec civilization that they come from are the first civilization of the Americas. I'm not saying that Olmec civilization was an African civilization. I'm saying that Africans were a part, an important part of the Olmec world. And you can see more of these images. For example, here's one with braids in the back. And you can compare that with this one right here. But these things are not taught in school. And so many African children grow up with a sense of inferiority because they never hear these things about themselves. All they hear about is slavery. They hear about the jungle. And European students grow up with a superiority simply because they are given a one-sided view of history that does not correspond to reality.
Renoko was responsible for producing no less than a dozen publications and hundreds of lectures that have been recorded in various cities throughout the world.
Let's just show you images of Africa and African people in various parts of the world. We'll call this part Unexpected Faces and Unexpected Places. Africa is the mother continent, that's where humanity began, but soon the rest of the world was peopled.
He not only found obscure documents in libraries and museums around the world, but he also collected the greatest archives, photographic archives of images of African people from all walks of life for thousands and thousands of years.
And this is a black man in China 500 years ago collecting taxes. These are images of the people called the Moors scattered throughout Europe, in Slovenia, your knight in shining armor, a man named Saint Maurice, a black knight.
He was a self-taught historian, and he was independent of any academic institution. So he therefore had the capacity to say what he wanted to say without fear of reprisals from the administration, without fear of not getting tenure. Renoko was part of a cadre of scholars who took full advantage of the information that is available to us in order to write and document a new story of African people's contribution to history and culture, and then to spread that message all over the world.
I believe that there will come a time, me as a historian, I know I feel this way, when I am going to come face to face with Chancellor Williams and John Henry Clark and Kwame Nkrumah and Marcus Garvey. You could call it in the by and by, in the next life, whatever. And they're going to look at me and say, Renoko Rashidi, what did you do to advance the cause of African people? And I will say, I did this. And they will say, I had no doubt. Welcome, my brother. Well done. And that gives me some kind of comfort and solace because I feel like I'm doing what I've been called upon to do. The rock has been rolling, rolling on.
You've been listening to the Fallen Heroes of 2021 on Making Contact. If you've enjoyed this episode, please write a review for us on Apple Podcasts and share it with your friends and family via Facebook. On Instagram, we're Making Contact Radio Project, and on Twitter, we're Making_Contact. To learn more about us and access other episodes for free, visit radioproject.org. The Making Contact team includes Jessica Partnow, Anita Johnson, Monica Lopez, Salima Hamarani, Sabine Blazin, and I've been your host, Andrew Stelzer. Thanks for listening to Making Contact. We leave you with the voice of a Black feminist icon that passed away just weeks ago, bell hooks.
I'm sure if you go around the world and ask most people, do you want to live in a world full of peace and the possibility of joy for everyone? Most people would answer in the affirmative. And yet we are living in a world that is totally full of strife and conflict, so that there's a gap between people's longing, their yearning, and how we're actually living in the world.
Well, that was the Making Contact Fallen Heroes 2021 episode. Are there heroes who died in 2021 that you think should have made that list? Let us know. In a bit, I'm going to take your calls at 813-239-9663. You can also email me at dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. Please sign your name if you text. We just heard bell hooks there at the end of that Making Contact documentary. And earlier on Democracy Now!, we heard Mamia Abu-Jamal talking about another person who died in 2021, and that was Desmond Tutu, who just died Sunday. So here's part of Desmond Tutu's obituary from the Associated Press. It says, Desmond Tutu was, for many around the world, an icon, a spiritual compass, a champion of the anti-apartheid struggle, but those who saw the Nobel Peace Prize winner up close basked in his roller coaster laughter, reveled his eyes widened theatrically, soaked up his pristinely enunciated remarks, and came away infused with the joy and the warmth of the man. He was a man of small kindnesses, a willingness to listen, quick to lighten the mood with, let's face it, some pretty silly jokes, and he loved to dance, mostly in church. So that's the AP talking there about Desmond Tutu, who died on Sunday. We also heard Mamia Abu-Jamal talking about some of the close contact he had with Desmond Tutu. Well, Desmond Tutu came to Tampa in January of 2006 to speak at the University of South Florida. The title of his talk was No Future Without Forgiveness. Right now, I'm going to play a 5-minute story that I filed for WMNF in 2006 about that speech from Desmond Tutu. And afterwards, we'll talk about other public figures who died in 2021 worth remembering. Again, you can send your email to dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. So right now is No Future Without Forgiveness, the topic of the speech by Desmond Tutu at the University of South Florida in Tampa in January of 2006. Here's a story I filed then.
There's no way in which we are going to win so-called wars against terror as long as there are conditions in the world which make people desperate.
Tutu won the 1984 Nobel Peace Prize because of his work for racial justice in apartheid South Africa. He still struggles for peace.
When we spend obscene amounts of money on what we call defense budgets, when we fully know that just a minute fraction of those budgets would ensure that God's children everywhere, our sisters and brothers, members of our family, would have clean water to drink, enough food to eat.
Tutu was asked by reporters about how Hurricane Katrina exposed economic and racial disparities in America and whether he thought that racial tensions exist in this country. An incredulous Tutu replied,
"You can't be serious." When people, for instance, clobber us in South Africa for the huge disparities between the rich and the poor, and you try to say to people, you know, we've been free only 11 years. You've been free centuries, and look at the disparities that you have, which were exposed so horrendously by Katrina.
In December 1995, South African President Nelson Mandela appointed Tutu to head the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. He thinks the United States needs a similar process to heal from the wounds of slavery, racism, and the genocide of Native Americans.
There is an unacknowledged pain that sits in the pit of the tummy of almost every African American, of every Native American, that you need to come to terms with the legacy of slavery. You want to look at that particular beast in the eye. You want to look at the legacy of the dispossession of those who were the first inhabitants of this land.
Tutu stressed that if reconciliation could successfully occur in South Africa, where apartheid and racist violence flourished for so long, this healing is something that should also be a goal in the United States.
The wound has not healed. It is festering. Take the risk of opening the wound. Take the risk of then cleansing that wound and then pour a soothing balm.
Several thousand people were in attendance, and Tutu thanked them and everyone who struggled to end apartheid in South Africa.
People boycotted South African goods on our behalf. People held rallies and vigils and demonstrations on our behalf. People were ready even to go to jail on our behalf. We asked for help. You gave the help, and look at us today. We are free.
WMNF asked Tutu what he thought about the continued imprisonment of Dr. Sami Al-Aryan, who has spoken out against the persecution of Palestinians. Tutu replied that he doesn't know the specifics of this case, but it is up to Americans to decide whether he is in prison for his political views.
As you are aware, the so-called war against terror has been used to justify quite a lot of things. You justify Guantanamo Bay. You justify the limiting civil liberties. So I think it is you who have to say, is it that he is being turned into a scapegoat or what?
Archbishop Tutu ended his lecture with a call for security through justice rather than through violence.
It is possible to get real security. Not from the barrel of a gun, but from the fact that people begin to enjoy justice.
For WMNF News, I'm Sean Canaan.
Well, that was a story that we aired on WMNF News on January 20th, 2006. It was Archbishop Desmond Tutu speaking at USF in Tampa. You can listen to this story and read about it at WMNF.org. So I just wanted to play that in remembrance of Desmond Tutu and his time that he came to Tampa. Desmond Tutu died on Sunday. Well, you're listening to Tuesday Cafe with Sean Canaan. And it is 10:44 in the morning, that is. And we're going to open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. And also, we're going to take your emails. And so, DeMarco has written in with the Miles Davis song called Tutu from 1986. So, thank you for sharing that. Not sure if I'll get to play it on the air today, but maybe in the future. But thanks for letting people know about that song, Tutu by Miles Davis. If you have something you'd like to write us about, give us a call. You can write us at dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885, or you can call in at 813-239-9663. I guess the best topic of the way to describe the topic of the show is people who died in 2021 who made a difference in the world, and who do you think should make this list? Let us know by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. I also wanted to bring you up to date with the latest information about COVID-19. There is a pretty big spike going on in Florida right now. Florida reported 39,000 new COVID-19 cases from the Christmas weekend. Thousands of people waited in lines for tests after their holiday gatherings and their flights on crowded airplanes. According to figures from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Florida has seen a sharp increase in new COVID-19 cases in the past week. Last Friday, it added more than 32,000 cases, and the day before that, 31,000 in one day. Following the Christmas weekend, thousands of Floridians around the state lined up sometimes for hours yesterday to get COVID-19 tests. Are you able to find COVID-19 tests? And if you can find some resources on our website, WMNF.org has information about where you can get tested, or where you can get vaccinated or boosters or treatment for COVID-19. And I wanted to mention this coronavirus news from the military. About a week or two ago, scientists at Walter Reed Army Institute of Research are going to soon announce that they have developed a vaccine that protects people from COVID-19 and all its variants, even the Omicron variant. And the vaccine is called the Spike Ferritin Nanoparticle COVID-19 Vaccine, or SPFN. I know that's been mentioned in the past in here, but I just wanted to bring that up on this show as well. Again, 813-238-8001. Sorry, that's our business line. 813-239-9663, or email dj at wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. If you've been listening to the afternoon and morning newscasts lately, you'll have heard a great two-part series by Ariel Stevenson, our reporter, about the Klosterman Preserve over there in Pinellas County. It's one of the last remaining sand scrubs in Pinellas County, and it's at risk of being destroyed. The group trying to buy and protect the land has 6 months left to raise more than $3 million for the purchase. And so Ariel went to Tarpon Springs and put together a two-part series of stories. Let's listen to part one right now about what's at risk with the West Klosterman Preservation Group.
In Tarpon Springs, nestled among subdivisions with names like Whispering Pines, sit 14 acres of uninterrupted Florida sand scrub. A vital part of the area's watershed, the land is in danger of being developed into high-end townhomes. The West Klosterman Preservation Group is raising funds to buy the land, but time is running out. I took a hike with the group's chairperson, Brad Huesler, to see and hear what's at stake.
The sand scrub is typically kind of a highland. The sand is easy to work with. So a developer would look at this and say, oh, I could easily build out here. And that's the problem, because that's where the developers have been choosing. And so we're losing a lot of it.
Scattered throughout the preserve are gopher tortoise nests of all sizes, some about a month or so old. Baby tortoises recently hatched, the eggshells still on the ground surrounding the burrows. Threatened under the Endangered Species Act because of the huge loss of habitat, the gopher tortoises are thriving here.
A lot of the eggs hatched this year. The tortoises lived to grow up a little bit and make some homes. So we're seeing a lot of the new burrows.
Called burrow aprons, entrances are sized according to each tortoise's shell. The underground burrows extend 14 feet long and 6 feet deep, keeping tortoises safe from fires, extreme temperatures, drought, and predators. One predator it doesn't protect against, development. Construction within 25 feet of a burrow requires a permit to move the tortoise to another location. According to the FWC, in 2021, 3,000 relocation permits were issued, accounting for one-fifth of all permits issued since 2008.
The things that live in the sand scrub only survive in the sand scrub. The tortoises, a lot of the plants, and these are becoming less and less in our county. We're trying to create a balance to where we don't completely lose these areas.
In the tortoises' digging, they sometimes unearth pieces of history. Called chert, the pieces of limestone debris are leftovers of ancient tool making.
Is that one of the pieces?
Yeah,
that looks like a little arrowhead almost.
Yeah, well, they make it out of that same material. It's like flint. You could tell when they crack it, it's like a razor. This one looks like a tool of some sort.
Nearby are some bones, possibly from a pig, cleaned and bleached by the sun. Coyotes often cut through the preserve. Osprey fly above, the sound of a highway barely audible. Huesler says Klosterman is full of wildlife.
There's all kinds of animals. We've spotted a bobcat back here. There's flying squirrels at night. They'll jump tree to tree if you have a flashlight.
Klosterman Preserve is owned by Pinellas County Schools. The preservation group needs $3.2 million by July 1st to save this place. They've raised $350,000. If successful, the 14 acres will be combined with adjacent 76 acres at Mariner's Point Management Area. The county manages Mariner's Point and has agreed to take over protection of Klosterman. Otherwise, developers are waiting. For more information, visit wkpreserve.com. For WMNF News, I'm Ariel Stevenson in Tarpon Springs.
And as I mentioned, that's part one of Ariel's two-part series. You may have heard the other half this morning, or maybe you heard it last night. But I'm going to play the second half right now as well, because it's a good two-part series about the Klosterman Preserve. And call in and let us know what you think about it, 813-239-9663. You can also email dj at wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. You're listening to Tuesday Cafe. I'm Sean Canaan. Here's the second part of Ariel Stevens's two-part story on the Klosterman Preserve.
1,000 feet from the Gulf of Mexico in Tarpon Springs are the 14 acres of sand scrub that make up the Klosterman Preserve. The West Klosterman Preservation Group is raising money to buy the property, but less than 6 months remain before the land can be sold to developers. I took a hike with the group's chairperson, Brad Huesler, to find out what's at stake.
In Pinellas County, there's only 1% of sand scrub remaining in our county, because this is highly desirable for a developer to build on.
The sand scrub is one of Florida's oldest ecosystems. It's considered critically endangered, with less than 1,500 square miles left in the state. There's over 100 species found in this environment, over a third of which is only found in the sand scrub, part of the watershed. Huesler says Klosterman's 14 acres recharge the groundwater.
When it does rain, the water that hits the ground goes underground through the aquifer out to the Gulf of Mexico. It is a big filter system. And so the health of the Gulf of Mexico, some of the surrounding water in our aquifer, does rely on this area also.
So it literally like scrubs the water.
No pun intended. The sand scrub literally scrubs the water.
Located near the back of the property is the Florida rosemary shrub, possibly one of the few remaining specimens in Pinellas County. Florida rosemary propagates through fire and thrives on sunshine and sandy soil. The rosemary shrub is home to a species of grasshopper that feeds only on Florida rosemary, thought to be extinct for the last 25 years in Pinellas County. Huesler says it's possible the rosemary grasshopper is living in Klosterman.
And the last one they saw was 25 years ago in Pinellas County. So I'm tempted to come out here with a flashlight. They only come out at night. If you did find a grasshopper on, you all find the first time anyone's seen one in our county if it's documented.
Longleaf pines, live oaks, palmetto, and prickly pears are just a few of the species that exist here. Florida's scrub jay has lived in the scrub and only in the scrub for over 2 million years. Huesler says that's why the West Klosterman Preservation Group is trying to protect this disappearing ecosystem.
We want to be the other side that helps to balance the scale. The scales are now tilted way towards the developers. So we really need everybody who can help to help us right now.
The Pinellas County School Board currently owns the land. If purchased by the group, the 14 acres will combine with the adjacent 76 acres at Mariner's Point Management Area and come under the county's care. Huesler and the West Klosterman Preservation Group need $3.2 million by July 1st to protect this area for future generations. For more information, visit wkpreserve.com. For WMNF News, I'm Ariel Stevenson in Tarpon Springs.
Well, thanks to Ariel for that two-part report on the Klosterman Preserve. And you can find out more on our website, wmnf.org. So thanks for that. I also want to read this comment that came in from Peter, from Pete, that is, in Seminole. He says, although I do appreciate the effort to stop those few acres from being developed, unfortunately, when a preserve is surrounded by development, the creatures within the preserve make their way into nearby civilization, like coyotes Hawaii's where I live, and it's just mayhem. Hopefully this will all work out, but I don't know how, says Pete in Seminole. So if you agree with Pete, or if you have a different feeling, let us know by texting 813-433-0885. You can also write DJ at WMNF.org. Or you can give us a call at 813-239-9663. And I want to read you this AP story that I just saw about what they call an unconventional cadre of people who have joined global efforts to increase COVID-19 vaccination rates. The AP describes them as being from South African undertakers to ultra-Orthodox Israeli rabbis. That group of unconventional people are trying now to get people to vaccinate. They've launched campaigns that traditionally have been the realm of public health authorities. They're opening church doors. They're going door to door, village to village. They're touting the benefits of vaccination, sometimes making shots available on the spot. They're up against fear, mistrust, complacence, inconvenience, and people who simply have bigger worries than COVID-19. But the push continues as the Omicron surges and the pandemic drags into its third year. The funeral directors explain their pressing concern. They say, we're burying too many people. So those are some unconventional assistants out there on the front lines of getting people vaccinated for COVID-19. You're listening to WMNF Tampa. This is the Tuesday Cafe. Let's go now to the phones, and we'll hear what Clay has to say. Hi, Clay. What's on your mind?
Hey, John. Thanks for taking the call, and a better new year to all of our listening audience. You mentioned both Walter Reed and the new vaccine they have, but we spent $1.75 billion with the Ilovax, create a vaccine that just got approval last Monday, or last week, at the European Union. Yet we don't seem to be able to have that available to us here.
Yeah, we followed the saga of the potential approval of the Novavax, so stay tuned for that. I don't know. I haven't heard it's not upcoming anytime soon in the United States, but we will continue to keep you updated.
It has 100% efficacy against the original strain and 93% efficacy against the more worrisome variant. So it's more powerful than the other two vaccines we're presently using. That came from a study of over 30,000 people.
You know, Clay, I thought for sure you were going to be calling in about the preserve, because I know you've done a lot of work up there in Pasco County on the environment.
Yes, and as far as the preserve goes, my question is, why is the school board not interested in preserving the land themselves? What are they so greedy about? Hey, it's not like they need the money. They should be donating the property to save that all those special things that are out there. So that's how I feel about that. I mean, they're as long as the government entity already. Why do they need to sell to the developer? That's the question to ask.
All right, great. Thanks so much for that call, Clay. Anything else?
Oh, by the way, the guy who called about the guy from Seminole, animals were here first. We invaded where they lived.
All right, thanks so much for that call, Clay. And you're listening to WMNF Tampa. I don't have much time left, but let's see if we can squeeze in a call from Doug in Clearwater. Hi, Doug. What's on your mind?
Hey, Sean. Thank you for the call, for taking my call. The guy that called in about the coyotes, I don't know. You know, we're wiping out I can't even think of the name now. The cat in South Florida.
Florida Panthers.
Thank you. And, you know, you want to develop the last 1% of camp scrub land, go for it. And I guess the coyotes will still be coming around. Thank you.
All right, Doug, thanks for making your point quickly. I appreciate that. And I want to also thank DT for his help on the show today. And thank you've been listening to Tuesday Cafe with Sean Canaan. I hope Barbara gets better soon and we can see her back next week. The show is every Tuesday morning at 10, Tuesday Cafe at 10. Next Tuesday, we're going to try to bring on a doctor to get the latest about the COVID-19 pandemic and the Omicron variant. I know I said that last week, but I'm going to keep trying this week. In this time slot tomorrow, Janet and Shelley will host Midpoint. Up next, we have guest hosts filling in at 11 o'clock, Mary and Arlene, who you remember from A Woman's Point of View. They're coming up next after NPR headlines. You are listening to WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland. Thanks so much for listening, and for supporting community radio in Tampa Bay.
Hey, this is Courtney Barnett. You're listening to 88.5 WMNF Tampa.